And we're holding on page Chof Aleph in Bava Metzia, about the middle of the page, middle of Os Zayin. We learned yesterday that you have three major areas of learning in Nigla. You have Mikra, which is Tanakh, you have Mishnah, which is the basic halachas, and you have Talmud, which is the analysis of them and the ability to derive new, to understand why the halacha is what it is, where we derive it from a pasuk or from one of the Yerudim Midas, or however we derive it exactly, and in what cases it applies, and so on and so forth, and ultimately be able to derive new halachas from that. So we said that, the Gemara had brought a braisa that Talmud is the greatest midah of all, and yet on the other hand, you should always run to Mishnah more than Talmud. So we said that was in Rebbe's times. Rebbe had composed the Mishnah. He composed finally an official text of the Mishnah after generations where every chacham taught the halachas to his talmidim in his own style. And machlokas were beginning to proliferate in the generations before Rebbe, and then finally in Rebbe's times there was a period of peace under the rule of Antoninus, the Roman emperor, and who he and Rebbe, as we know, were great friends. And then at that point Rebbe was able to gather together the chachamim and establish an official text of the Mishnah. So on the one hand, he taught that Talmud is the greatest thing, because that's what we're saying. With that, you'll be able to actually learn the halacha. But then everybody was abandoning learning Mishnayos, and therefore Rebbe had to re-stress to them that it's important to run to Mishnayos as well, lest the Mishnayos themselves be forgotten. And then if you mix up what it says in the Mishnayos, then you're not going to be able to do Talmud or Gemara analysis either. So you need both, in other words. So the Gemara says, so this is where we pick up, my drush, about the middle of page Chof Aleph. My drush, when Rebbe darshan originally and then taught the first part of the Braisa, that Talmud, ein lecha midah gedola mizu, that it's the greatest of all, so my drush, what posik did he darshan to arrive at that conclusion that Talmud is greater than Mishnah? Now we would say, why does he need a posik for it? On the face of it, that's on the face of it, based on what we explain, it seems like common sense. But on the other hand, the fact, again, that the Mishnah is the foundation of everything, maybe it is the greatest. Maybe it's not just when people are abandoning the Mishnah, maybe even when not. It's important to first to focus much more on Mishnah than on Talmud. So the answer is, Shididorish Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Loi. As we find what Rabbi Yehuda b'Rabbi Loi, this is regular Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana and Shas, Darshan a Pasuk, from which we see that the Talmidei Chachamim, who learn Talmud and know how to analyze and derive the halachas, are the highest level. Namely, my dichtiv, the pasuk says in Yeshaya, we have it in Haftarah of Yom Kippur morning, Hagid la'ami pisham, Hashem tells the Navi, tell my people their deliberate sin. Pesha is actually more than deliberate. Pesha is, pisham is their rebellious sins. We know this, chet, oven, and pesha. Chet is when a person does something inadvertently. Oven is when he does it deliberately, and pesha is when he does it rebelliously. So Hagid la'ami pisham, tell my people about their pesha, about their rebellious avedos, olaveis Yaakov chatoisam, and tell the house of Yaakov their chatoisam, their inadvertent sins. So what is that pasuk? Why the double expression, and why is it not saying together Hagid la'ami beis Yaakov pisham chatoisam? Why the parallelism and then several other points? Hagid la'ami pisham, the first half of the pasuk. That says, tell my people their deliberate rebellious avedus, eilat Talmidei Chachamim. That refers to the Talmidei Chachamim, and we mean the ones who are learning Talmud, because again, the definition of a Talmid Chacham really eventually is that he's able to learn Talmud, this analysis of the reasoning and the details behind the Mishnayos and Braisos. So tell them. So Hagid la'ami pisham refers to the Chachamim. Shesh shgogis nasis lahem kizdonis. If they do even an inadvertent avera, it's considered for them as though they did it deliberately. Because they should know better, basically. They have learned Talmud, they have learned how to analyze and derive the halachas, and if now they go and do an aveira and go against that, then we consider it a pesha, we consider it a rebellious thing. They should have realized, in other words, Rashi explains particularly what it means is, they should have been paying more attention to what they're learning about the reasons for their Mishnayos, So actually, Rashi seems to understand that shgogas doesn't even mean mistakes as in they do an inadvertent davera. It means a mistake in their analysis of learning. If they had paid more attention to the reasons behind their Mishnayos, then and not just focus on the Mishnayos alone, then they would realize what the correct halacha is, and therefore when they teach wrongly, then it's considered for them like a zodin, it's considered for them like something deliberate, because they should have paid more attention and realized that they're understanding it in a flawed way, and they're not using enough Talmud analysis. So that's them. On the other hand, Leves Yaakov Chatoisam, when it continues to the house of Yaakov, meaning the rest of the people, they're inadvertent Averis, that means Elo Ami Ha'aretz Shezdonis Nasus Lam Kishgogis. They were the other way around. The Ami Ha'aretz, even they do deliberate Averis, for them it's considered like an inadvertent Averis because they don't know better, basically. So we see, in other words, that the Talmud Chachamim who've learned Talmud are being held to a higher standard. They're expected to know their stuff, and if they make a mistake, whether in analysis of Torah, whether in an actual Avera, then it's treated much more stringently. In fact, Ion Yaakov points out that explains the expressions Ami versus Beis Yaakov. So Ami means that also explains the Haggid versus the Haggid by them. Haggid, we know the Gemara elsewhere tells us, means Dvarim Shekoshim Kegidim, very harsh words like wormwood, like a bitter herb. So therefore, so Haggid LaAmi, to Ami, to the Tanna Chachamim, you can tell them very strongly and very sharply that they're doing wrong, so, and that they need to correct it. On the other hand, Beis Yaakov Chatoi, Beis Yaakov, as we know, Beis Yaakov Elo Anoshim, so it includes the Amei Oretz and everybody else who is like they're not on that higher level of learning, so therefore, so them you speak to more gently. Now, Marsha brings up a point as follows. The question is, in that case, then, don't you have, is it based on what we're saying, in a way, a person might think it's better to be an Amoritz. If he's an Amoritz, then he can get away with more. As opposed to, if he's a Talmud Chacham, then even his smallest mistake is going to be amplified and is going to be considered like a Pesha. So what kind of a motivation is this for a person to learn and become a Talmud Chacham? So Marsha says actually that no, a different meaning. And another question, as Marshall says, after all, fine, we're saying the Amal Oretz maybe doesn't know better, but the fact is he is doing something deliberately. Why shouldn't Hashem hold it against him like a deliberate Aveda? Why are we saying he couldn't know better, and that's that? So rather, Marsha says, Fakir, this is the whole point of this piece is to tell us about the greatness of learning Gemara, of learning Talmud, and the level that a person can reach. So Fakir, what it means is like this. When you have a Talmud Chacham, so then you have the kind of things where the average person might not know something, but a Talmud Chacham knows them. Think of like in Hilchos Shabbos, for example. Think of how many nuances and things in Hilchos Shabbos or Hilchos anything else, really, where a Talmud Chacham is going to know these fine details. And Amoritz may not even be aware that there's a problem. So, let's say, for example, you have finer details of Muktzah, finer details of Bishul, let's say other examples like that. So you have things where Talmud Chacham will realize that there's an issue over here, and Amoritz may not even realize that there's an issue. So therefore, Marashah says, what the Gemara is saying is, Shgogas Nasus Lem Kazernus means Faket. It means things that the average person might do B'shogig, because they don't know better. The Talmud Chacham knows what they are, and he knows that it would actually be breaking Shabbos to do it, and he would be careful just as much as a person would be careful to stay away from a deliberate Aveira. So let's say, for example, let's say with some finer detail, as far as halachas of Bishul, for example, let's say, I don't know, putting something back on the stove, for example, where an average person might not realize there's a problem, and a Talmud Chacham knows better. So the average person might put it back because he thinks there's nothing wrong. He doesn't even know better. As opposed to a Talmud Chacham, who knows better, he will make sure to stay very far away from that because he knows that it's wrong. So as much as a regular person would stay away from deliberate Avedas, he stays away from such finer details. And that's better, because that means he's not being Mechal Shabbos. As opposed to what we're saying is, the Amar Oretz, you have the other way around, things that the average person who's not a Talmud Chacham and not an Amar Oretz, a person who's had a shtickle learning, would be expected to know. Here the Amar Oretz has less than that even, so he doesn't know. These are things that a regular person would know. Wait, that's an Avera, let me not do it. But the Amar Oretz simply doesn't know better, and he ends up being Mechalel Shabbos or various other things, push it without knowing better. So in that sense, then, so on the one hand, the Gemara seems to be saying that Hashem treats him more leniently, but on the other hand, Marsha is saying, Fakir, because he didn't learn, therefore he ends up doing many more Averas and being ultimately held for account to them, where if he had learned something, then at least he would know to stay away from these things, because he would at least know the basic framework of Hilchos Shabbos, for example. So that's how Maharsha understands. So in that case, it comes out that Faker, you are better off being a Talmud Chacham, because then you know at least to, again, then at least you know, or if not Talmud Chacham, at least be a shtickle Talmud Chacham, at least know enough to be able to, at least know enough to be able to know the basics of the things that the average Yid should be expected to know in these halachas, and that way you won't go wrong. Behind the Tanan, this also explains what the same Rabbi Yehuda, we just quoted in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi, this drosha on the pasuk. Anyway, so the point is that because of that drosha is what motivated Rebbe to originally tell the people of his times that Talmud is more important, because ultimately Talmud is how you learn what the halachas are, and that's how you know how to act. But now, Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi, which is Sam Rabbi Yehuda, had said this drosha on the pasuk behind the Tanan. This also explains what we learn in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the same Rabbi Yehuda, says in the Mishnah and over there, Heve Zohar v'Talmud, be careful with Talmud, be careful to understand the Gemara and to understand the analysis of the halachas thoroughly. And Rashi also adds, it means if you learn a new Mishnah or a new Braisa from your Rebbe, make sure to ask him to ferret out the details. Which Tana does this come from? Is it reliable? What are the details behind it? Why is the Braisa saying that? And so on and so forth. And that way you won't go wrong. So he says, be careful with that. Shashigas Talmud, or Lazodin, because a mistake in Talmud, if you then don't analyze it thoroughly and you end up paskining wrongly, then for a Talmud Chacham, it's considered to be Zodin. It's considered to be as though you paskin wrongly deliberately because you had the ability to learn it more thoroughly and to know what the proper halacha should be, and you didn't bother, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda is saying you're held responsible. So we see again, this fits with this idea that the Talmud Chachamim are held to a higher standard. So now the Gemara continues. On the other hand, here's another way of looking at it about the various groups of Jews that we're talking about. So we're talking about the Amei Oretz. You have the various categories of people who've learned Torah, starting from Mikra, working up to Mishnah, and eventually Talmud. Let's talk about, so here we're saying, on the one hand, the Talmud Chachamim are on a higher level. On the other hand, let's talk about, there's a different way in which we refer to all Jews, and we all have something in common. So Dorash Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi, the same Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Loi, gave a drosha as follows. Maidichtiv, what does it mean? A pasuk also from Yeshaya. This we have in the Haftarah of Shabbos Rosh Chodesh. Shimu dvar Hashem hacharedim al dvorei. Hear the word of Hashem, you who tremble at His word. This is where we get the word charedim from Jews, or a subset of them comes from this pasuk. The whole pasuk goes like this. Shimu dvar Hashem acharedim odvori. The Gemara is going to darshan it phrase by phrase, but the whole pasuk goes like this. Shimu dvar Hashem acharedim odvori. Hear the word of Hashem, you who tremble at His word, meaning pashut that you're very eager to do what Hashem says, and you would tremble at the possibility that you might be going wrong. The pasuk continues. Omru acheichem sen eichem min adeichem. Your brothers, your enemies, those who consider you rejected, say l'man shmi yichvad Hashem, because of my name Hashem will be honored. The but we will see your simcha behem yevoshu, and they will be ashamed. Simple meaning of the pasuk in context is the psukim before that, at the beginning of that haftarah, at the beginning of that perek, are talking about people who put on a show of being frum and really in secret they're doing all kinds of serious averis. So now they put on a show and they say that they profess to look down on the frum Jews, on the ones who are actually shomer Torah mitzvahs, and say we're better than you, and because of us Hashem will be honored because we're more careful in mitzvahs than you are. And really Hashem is saying v'nir b'simchaschem, eventually we'll see your simcha v'hem yevoshu, and those fakers will be embarrassed of what they did. But here the Gemara is going to take, here Rabbi Yehuda is going to darish in the pasuk differently. So first of all, Shimu dvar Hashem acharedim al dvorei. Who are these charedim al dvorei, the ones who tremble at Hashem's word? Eilu Talmud Chachamim, that refers to the Talmud Chachamim, who, again, they've spent a lot of time, Rashi explains, they've spent a lot of time learning and being the shamish Talmud Chachamim, so now they know the reasoning and the logic behind the Mishnayos thoroughly. So they are the charedim al-dvari. They're the ones who tremble at Hashem's word because they know Hashem's word the most thoroughly, and then what Hashem tells us to do and not to do, and they're diligent and careful about doing it. Maharshal says this also fits then with the previous piece where we just said that zonah shgogas nasas lankas zonah, precisely because they know the severity of the various things involved in chilul Shabbos and in other areas like that, therefore they make sure to stay away even from the things that the average person might not know that there's anything wrong with them. So that's a charedim al dvarei. Next, the pasuk continues, Omru Acheichem, your brothers have said. Who are your brothers in this context? Says Rabbi Yehuda, Eilu Bali Mikra. This refers to the people who are experts in Mikra. So they've learned Mikra, they've learned Tanakh, but they haven't yet graduated to the next levels of learning. So they're called Acheichem for one thing, in the sense they have nothing against the higher levels from the Chachamim. They know perfectly well that they can't paskin halacha directly from the Pesukim, so they know they have to rely on the Tamid Chachamim, the Bali Talmud, to tell them what the actual halachas are, what to do and what not to do, and therefore they get along very well with one another. In fact, Marshall says another point as well. They're young, after all. When is a person focusing on Tanakh? Primarily when he's young. Again, like we talked about yesterday, you have the schedule that it says in Pirkei Avos, where by 10, he starts learning Mishnah, and at 15, Talmud, and so forth. So the youngsters, they're not yet at their Mila, at your Mila, they're Acheichem, you never know. They may reach a level comparable to you when they get older. The Maharal makes another point as well. You have Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh. We sometimes draw an analogy between them and a husband and wife. We had a few days ago in Tanya and Igeres Chavtes, where the Alter Rebbe talked about that, but they're like Torah Shebichsav is the father and Torah Shebaalpeh is the mother. But another way of looking at it is they're like brothers, co-equals. So in that sense, then, therefore, so the ones who learn Torah Shebichsav are the equal, or the brothers, they're learning the brotherly thing of Torah Shebaalpeh. So therefore, there's another reason they're called Acheichem. Next, saying Eichem Eilu Bali Mishnah. When the pasuk continues, your enemies, that means the ones who focus on Mishnayos. Now Rashi explained, why should they hate the Bali Talmud? Because, as we've been discussing, you can paskin halacha only from Talmud. You can't paskin halacha directly from the Mishnah, because, as Rashi has been explaining the whole time, you may not know that the Mishnah says something, but you don't know whether it's a das yochid, you don't know whether it applies only in certain limited circumstances, and so on and so forth. And if you try to paskin from the Mishnah, then the Gemara tells us elsewhere you're going to go wrong. So now, the Talmud Chachamim, the ones who learn Talmud, make that clear to people. And therefore, the Bali Mishnah resent them for that, because they're saying that you're putting us down, you're acting as though our level of learning is unimportant. So right now, there's Sein Eichem. Marsha points out another meaning as well. Sein Eichem is with a sin, but we can also douch in it as though it's Sein Eichem with a shin. So therefore, it stems from the same Shurdish of the word Mishnah. So they also interact with you. They also, though, right now, they're only up to Mishnah, but eventually they may graduate to Talmud and be on your level. So they're called Sein Eichem. Minadechem Elo Amei Aretz. The ones who reject you, who consider you off limits, refers to the Amei Aretz. Now, the Amei Aretz also don't like the Tamar Chachamim, so Rashi over here doesn't elaborate why. He just says Minadechem, they consider them disgusting like a nida. In other places in Shas, we find that, for example, the Tamar Chachamim, in those days, we often, sometimes a nickname that's used for them in the Gemara is Purushim, because they would have to physically stay away from the Amei Aretz because of matters involving Tumah V'Tahara and Maisrus and all of that. So therefore, the Amei Aretz often resented the Tamar Chachamim, because like they thought the Tamar Chachamim are holding themselves higher than them. We know, for example, Rabbi Akiva, when he was an Amei Aretz, resented the Chachamim and said, I would bite them like a donkey, and so on and so forth. So therefore, the Amei Aretz, in this pasuk, are called Minadechem, those who reject you, those who consider you off limits like a nigger. Marshall refers to a Gemara in this connection in Psachim, that says that a Tamar Chacham should not marry a daughter of an Amei Aretz, because they're considered shekets. They're considered repulsive and off limits. So therefore, so now the Amei Aretz reciprocate and consider the Chachamim to also be off limits and hated by them, and not just hated but rejected by them. And Marshall adds, unlike the Acheichem and Seneichem, the Bali Mikra and Bali Mishnah, who at least have aspirations to become like the Bali Talmud. Eventually they're going to grow up and they're going to graduate to Mishnah and graduate to Talmud, and then they'll be on that level. The Amei Aretz have no aspirations even to do that. They just consider who needs to be a Talmud Chacham. We're not interested. Well, so therefore, so the pasuk is referring to all of them. Now, Shema Toimar, now you might say, well, in that case, if you're talking about the lower levels then, and the pasuk continues, Laman, they're saying, Omru, they're saying, Laman Shmi Yichvad Hashem, for my sake, Hashem is going to be honored. It sounds like they can say all they want, but it's not going to actually happen. So you would think, Shema Toimar, Posak, or Ovad Sivram, or Votel Sikuyam. You might think that their hope and their future is lost and is gone. You might think, in other words, they're in the greater scheme of things, they're goners because they didn't bother reaching the level of the Bali Talmud. And they're saying that Hashem, that through them Hashem will be honored. And maybe it's not so. Maybe in fact they're going to be shown up for having missed the boat. Ben Yehoyada says another point as well. Ovad Sivram Uvotel Sikuyam may also mean like this: they have their svara, they worked on their svara of Mikra and Mishnah, but they never graduated to Talmud, and therefore their svara is not really a svara. So we might say then that Ovad Sivram, like all their svara, all their mental effort that they put into Mikra and Mishnah, maybe doesn't count for anything. And Votel Sikuyam, their future is gone. Maybe refers to the Ame Oretz. Maybe they don't even get a Chelak Olam Haba. No, Tamad Loim of Nira v'Simchas Chem. Therefore, the pasuk continues, we will see in your Simcha. Now, it's not Ve'ere, Rashi says. Ve'ere would suggest that I, the Tamad Chacham, am looking down the Ve'ere would refer to the Navi. If it said Ve'ere v'Simchas Chem, it would mean the Navi is addressing specifically the Tamad Chachamim, HaChareidim Al-Dvore, as it says at the beginning of the pasuk, and saying, I will see your Simcha, and the rest of them, forget about them. No, it says V'nira, we will see, so all of us together, the HaChareidim Al-Dvore, and the Achechem, and the Sinechem, and the Menadechem, all of us together, we will see your Simcha. So Marshall says, yeah, that you would think, you would think that they're not, you're going to think, right, so for, that's what you would think, right. So, but no, Shema Toimar, so you might think, no, first the pasuk is saying, V'nira b'simchas chem, that it means that all of them are talking. The Navi, together with the Achechem, Senechem, and Adechem, is all talking. But you might think, fine, it means they're going to see the Simcha, but they're not going to actually participate in it themselves. So you would think, Shema Toimar, Yisroel Yevoshu, you would think there are going to be Jews who are going to be embarrassed, L'osid Lavoi, that they didn't achieve what they should have achieved. Talmud Loima, therefore the pasuk says Vehem Yevoshu, they will be embarrassed. Who's the they? Others who are not even named in the pasuk, namely Odekachovim Yevoshu, the Goyim who never even had it, they didn't even reach the level of the Amei Oretz. They still remain Goyim. Yevoshu, they will be the ones who are ashamed. They're not even part of us. They're not called on the name Yisrael, so they will be embarrassed. Yisrael Yismachu, the Jewish people will be the one, all collectively will be the ones who have the Simcha. Even the Amei Oretz, they reached whatever level they could, and they're for Jews, and they're all going to be fixed up. La'asid Lavoi. And they'll have a chelik olam haba, and they will also join in the simcha of Mashiach's times. No, we're talking about the Jews. All the categories of Jews mentioned in this pasuk. Haredim advara, achechem, senechem, even menadechem, still, they're Jews, and they're going to have their tikkun, la'asid lavoi, and they're also going to be part of the simcha. Who's going to be there? The heim yevoshu is going to be the goyim who are outside of all of that.
They also have a
chelik. That's what we're saying. They're also a poyisio. That's what we're saying. Yeah. Maoshaw gives a whole. So this is one level of understanding what the Gemara was saying over here, based on Rashi. Maoshaw says there's another way we can understand these last few lines as well. The Achechem, Senechem, and Adechem were saying they all learn the pshat levels of Torah. They all learn the nigla. They don't learn the Nistores. Now, Nistor in this connection doesn't necessarily mean Kabbalah. It means even the Gemara itself. The analysis of Talmud itself is in a way of a Nistor. It's like something that's not so obvious, and you have to really delve into it and figure it out. So you might think then. So now, Laman Shmi, they're gonna think, Laman Shmi, because of my name, we don't bother with the Nistaris, Laman Shmi, Yichvad Hashem, so they're gonna think that maybe the ones who are not delving into the deeper levels, so through them Hashem will be honored, but we're saying, after all, the Pasuk says, Kvod Elokim Hasir Dabar, the honor of Hashem is to hide the matter, so maybe Adam, and maybe the Bali Mikra, and Bali Mishnah, and the Amei Oretz, who are not delving into the Nistaris, maybe they're better off. Maybe they're showing Hashem more honor by leaving those aside and not trying to delve into them. So now the problem is that later on, what if they change their mind and decide, you know what, it would be better for us to become Talmid Chachamim. The problem is, on the face of it, they're not going to be able to. Maybe Posak Sivram, maybe they'll never be able to. Having missed that out at the beginning, maybe they'll never be able to overcome that point that they missed out and make it up. So now we're saying v'heim v'nira v'simchaschem, we will all be included in the simcha of the Talmid Chachamim. In which case, then the nun in that case, v'nira, has two meanings. Maharsha points out Rashi was explaining v'nira means we will see, as in the Navi, together with all these groups, are all saying we together will see your simcha. But now we can also understand the nun as the passive form. Your simcha will be seen. So it means all of us, but it also means all of us will be seen to be joining in the simcha. Because those three groups, they can also ultimately reach the Talmud Chacham's level, even the Am HaAretz, if he puts his mind to it, like Rabbi Akiva, can become the greatest Talmud Chacham. So another level of what we're saying, you would think, Ovad Sivra and Vatzal Sikuryam means what, if they didn't start out to begin with, planning to become Talmid Chachamim, planning to become Bali Talmud, they may never be able to reach that. No, we're saying even the Amei Aretz have the opportunity to reach those levels. Then we're going to say, though, that maybe after all there are going to be some Jews who are going to be embarrassed. So no, we're saying that's only Behem Yevoshu, not referring to the previous groups, but rather the Goyim, that Yevoshu and Yisrael, all Jews, Yismachu will be part of the Simcha. All of them will be the Nira, the Simchaschem. All of us will be visible as part of the Simcha. Hamafkin Perek Shlishi. So the Perek begins by the Perek talks about dinim of shomerim. You have the four shomerim, and you have it discusses various dinim involving them. The first case, the first Mishnah talks about the case. Hamafkin it's a chaver, person deposits for safekeeping something by somebody else, and later on it's lost or stolen. You have the various dinim over there about if he pays versus if he swears in the case where he can swear and be potter. What happens if the thing was stolen, if the ganav is caught, and so you have the whole discussion about all the ins and outs of that. Eventually, you have a piece like this. The Gemara in that connection brings up a point like this. Even in the cases, suppose you have the case, the Shomer, the Mishnah describes, you can have the Shomer is saying, I'm willing to pay. I don't want to swear in Beis Din that it was stolen. I'm willing to pay for it. However, the Gemara points out, Rav Huna says, that you still have to make him swear a different shvur that it's in a Birshusay. Because after all, he might decide to keep it for himself, and I'll pay for it. So if it's something that's easily accessible, that's easily available in the store, then we're not going to do that. But if we're talking about it's a unique kind of object, then we're going to do that. So that leads the Gemara to quote in that connection a Mishnah from Shavuos about a case involving a mashkin where the Malva and Loiva argue about the value of it in various cases involving Shavuos over there. Eventually, the Gemara brings up a point as follows. Based on what we're saying, that sometimes the one who's holding the pikkudin has to swear that it's not in his possession, then in one of the cases that it discusses in the Mishnah over there, where you have an argument between the malva and the loiva, how much it's worth, why aren't we also having the malva, in one of those cases, where we should have the malva be taking a shavua that it's ain't a bir shusay. There are certain cases where the loiva takes the shvur, other cases where the malva takes the shvur, depends which one is moida, depends which one is koifer, etc. Yeah. So the Gemara is asking that there should be a certain case where the malva should have to swear that it's ain't a bir shusay, and we don't find him doing that. Because you have the case. Imagine, for example, the case that it describes there in the Mishnah is that Reuven borrows money from Shimon and gives him the mashkin. Later on, the mashkin is destroyed or what have you. Now, you can have different cases. There can be an argument where there can be a case where the loiva owes for the loan. On the other hand, the malva owes the loiva for the mashkin. So it depends which one is worth more. So you have various cases where the malva claims that the mashkin was worth less, and the loiva claims it was worth more over various permutations like that. So now you have a certain case over there where it says that the malva is potter from a shvua, but the question is why shouldn't he have to swear that it's ain't a bir shusay? So the Gemara says because that case could be talking about where the malva trusts the loiva that it's not bir shusay. The only question is how much it's worth. So the loiva is saying, listen, as far as you the malva, you Shimon are saying you don't have it in your shus. Fine, I'm willing to accept your word for it. I'm willing to accept your say-so. But you're also saying that it's worth a lesser amount, and therefore, it cancels out the loan, but no more than that. You don't owe me anything. That I don't agree with, because the fact is, it was my object, and I know how much it's worth, and you may not, and therefore, if you want to claim that, take a shavur. Okay, so the Gemara says, Maishna loiva de mehemen loiva malva. So why are we assuming that in a case like that, the malva would trust the loiva, the loiva would trust the malva, that he doesn't have it in his possession, or Maishna malva de mehemen loiva loiva? Well, why in that case wouldn't the malva trust the loiva? The loiva is saying that the mashkin was worth X amount. So why do we have cases over there where the loiva has to swear? Why don't we say the same way as there are cases where the loiva trusts the malva that he doesn't have it in his possession? Why don't we say the same thing the other way around, that there are cases where the malva trusts the loiva how much it was worth, and then there's no shvur? Why is the Mishnah from Masechta Shvuos that the Gemara is quoting over here taking it as a given that always in as many cases as possible the loiva is going to have to swear and not necessarily the other way around? So the answer is, loiva mekayim b'malva. The loiva mekayim b'malva tumas yishronim tanchem. Because the loiva realizes and figures that the malva, that through the malva there has been fulfilled the following pasuk. Tumas yishronim tanchem, the tnimus, the uprightness of Yaakov Ishtam, from this week's parasha, of the upright lead them. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, in general, if he wasn't an honest person, if he wasn't a Yoshev and Ammon, then Hashem wouldn't have allowed him to become rich. Obviously, it's not always the case. We know that there are rich people who are corrupt, but the derech klal, more often than not, you're going to have that the fact that a person became rich and now is in a position to be a malva and to lend to others means that Hashem trusted him with that money because he's an honest, upright person. So therefore, there are cases where the loiva can take the malva's word for something and not require him to swear. On the other hand, malva mekayim be'ed loiva, whereas the malva feels that the loiva is in the position of the second half of that same pasuk, the selef burgim yeshodim, the corruption, the fact that he does things wrongly, burgim of the disloyal person, yeshodim throws them down. The very fact that this guy is poor and now is in a position to have to borrow money, so the malva feels maybe that shows that he's not such an honest person, and therefore, like, Hashem doesn't want to trust him with money as much, and therefore I don't necessarily want to trust him so much with his say so about how much the mashkin was worth or whatever, and therefore I'm going to make him swear. So in other words, in short, what we're saying is, it's not a hard and fast rule, but there's more reason to assume that the loiva would trust the malva rather than the other way around. In this connection, the famous vort of Rabbi Meir Premishlaner, Ben Yoyada brings it over here on the Gemara, that one time two people came to him and asked him to help them draft a contract that were going to be going into partnership with one another, and they want Rabbi Meir's help in writing a contract. So he took out a piece of paper and wrote out the letters Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. What does that mean? He tells them it stands for Emuna, Bracha, Gneva, Dalos. If you're honest, then there'll be bracha in your partnership. And if not, if there's going to be gneva, if one is going to be stealing from the other one, dalos, then there'll be poverty. So our Gemara is basically expressing the same idea that in the same way, other things being equal, the malva is more likely to be an honest person than the loiva, and therefore that the malva is less likely to trust the loiva than the loiva is the malva. Further on in the perek, it talks about like this. I think we'll leave that for tomorrow. Yonyan Mashiach Ogu'ula, Chav Zayin, what does it say? Chav Zayin Cheshvan. So the Rebbe was talking in early Tafshin Nun Aleph, late 1990, where Jews were starting to come out of Russia in large numbers as the Iron Curtain was falling. So you have at that point where hundreds of thousands of Jews, of Russian Jews, are going free and able to become closer to observing mitzvahs. So the Rebbe talked about at that time. This is a me'ein, and this is an example and a preparation for the full kibbutz goliath of Mashiach's times, as you have the psukim, Kol Gadol Yoshuv Hena, that the Torah said, that the pasuk says, that a great congregation will return here. So all of a sudden you had hundreds of thousands of Jews who had been mostly cut off of Yiddishkeit, and now all of a sudden they have the chance to reconnect with it. This is an example of Tayamer Chaim Zohu, just like before Shabbos, we taste the Shabbos food and we get a foretaste of it, the same way before Mashiach comes, we get a foretaste of Kibbutz Goliath in that kind of thing. Still learning halachas about going to the bathroom. We were talking about that when a person goes to the bathroom and afterwards and he wipes. So now, the Alter Rebbe continues, if a person is not finicky and he wipes with his bare hands, this does not apply. Now the Gemara says this point, b'chlal, when a person is wiping, but the Alter Rebbe is understanding that this halacha that the Gemara refers to, which we're going to talk about, which hand to use, the Alter Rebbe understands that it's referring to when he's wiping barehanded. Now other posts can disagree with that, but this is how the Alter Rebbe holds. So, what?
Water.
As the water we talked about at the end of the previous siman, at the end of the previous sif, that's better to wash with water rather than just wiping with stones or whatever they used in those times. By the way, I forgot to mention yesterday when we finished that, this is one of those kinds of things where you can definitely learn such halachas, and you can take a moment to thank the Eibishter that we live now in the 21st century where we have toilet paper rather than having to use rocks and pieces of earthenware and other things like that to wipe. Anyway, so now the Alter Rebbe is saying, if a person is wiping barehanded, and yes, it could be with or without water, as the case may be, he should not use his right hand, only his left hand. Why? Because your right hand is what you use to tie tefillin onto your left arm. So therefore, your right hand, as a chshivus, you don't want to use it for wiping, you don't want to use it for wiping tzoya from that area. Then the Alter Rebbe continues, even when you're using your left hand, it's better, if you can help it, to not use the middle finger, because that also has to do with tefillin. You wrap the ritzua of the tefillin around the middle finger. Then you have, if it's a left-handed person, then the other way around, then he should wipe with his right hand and not his left. This is one of those halachas which is flipped around for lefties. Now all this is only as far as wiping, and again, as the Alter Rebbe says, only when he's wiping barehanded, not when he's using toilet paper or whatever. But in addition, also the Alter Rebbe continues, now, for example, a person urinates and sometimes drops splash on his legs, and the Gemara tells us, which we'll learn in the next sif, that you have to wipe them off, so that he's allowed to wipe with his right hand as well. And the same way, for example, if he has lice or other bugs, those also he can kill with his right hand. That's not considered a bizoyan to the right hand. Only we're talking about as far as wiping soya barehanded, that not to use the right hand for. Okay. Now, speaking of that matter of urinating, so again, you may have that drops will fall on his legs. So now, like this, if a man is standing to urinate, now if he doesn't hold anything up, then it's going to splash onto his legs, and then afterwards, a lot of it is going to splash on his legs, and he's going to have to clean it up afterwards. So now he may want to lift up the aver to prevent that, so that the stream will go further away. Well, he's not allowed to touch the aver itself because that can cause hihurim. However, what he can do is he can hold it up using the beitzim from underneath. Now, if it does fall on his legs, then the Alter Rebbe continues from various places. He should wipe them off right away, not walk in public with that on his legs. I mean, nowadays we wear pants, it's not really noticeable anyhow, but back then when people often went bare-legged, then it's a problem, the Gemara explains, because then people are going to think he's a krus shofcha, they're going to think he's injured in that area, and they're going to start being moitzi laws about the parentage of his children. So he has to wipe it off right away. So, on the other hand, though, again, he can't hold the actual aver, because that's ki'ilu maybe mabul olam, the Gemara phrases it, it's like he's bringing a mabul to the world, because he may be moitzi zera levatola. With the exception, he can hold me'atoro olamata, he can hold the tip of it, either that, because then that doesn't cause him to be aroused, or he holds it using a thick cloth. Now, the Alter Rebbe goes on to say, if he's married and his wife is in town, then mi'ikra, and she's tahor, then mi'ikra din, he is allowed to hold it anywhere, because it's called pas basala. He has the ability to have relations, so therefore we're not concerned that he might be motzi zera levatola, but nevertheless, midas chassidus is to be machmir in that case as well. And even for a person who's married, it's only for a man who's married, it's not if he needs to scratch himself, then the only thing he can do is use a thick cloth, which that way he's not going to come to any arousal at all. So basically, you have the Gemara mentions, for example, says about Rabbeinu HaKadosh that he was called HaKadosh because he never even put his hand below his waist. And you have other examples like that in the Gemara where a person is supposed to be very careful about that kind of thing, not to cause himself hirhurim and not to be moitzi zera levatola. Okay. Yeah.